Hello and welcome to the Level 3 podcast. This is Chris, and today I have Chip and Elizabeth, and they have written Wisdom of Place tarot deck. Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, it does focus in real life. Super interesting, beautiful deck, and I would just love to hear more about them because they are fascinating people from what I've read so far. If you guys could please introduce yourselves.
Hi, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having us on. So, I'm Elizabeth. I'm a landscape architect, and I teach landscape architecture at University of California in Davis.
And I'm a professor in the Department of Landscape Architecture at the University of California in Berkeley. I teach mostly design, creative process, creative thinking, drawing, and studio. My interests have always been kind of landscape architecture as an art form, metaphysics, and the whole idea behind kind of like creating microclimates and landscape architecture.
And one of the things that's kind of the foundation of our profession of landscape architecture is this idea called genius loci. And I don't know if you've heard of that, but it means spirit of place. And that just refers to, like, as a designer, really understanding all the natural patterns and the cultural processes and things that happen on land before you presume to change it. You know, it's like you kind of have to know the existing conditions and it really broad context. And we kind of feel like people are losing touch with that idea of the spirit of place. Everybody is so into their phones and it's all about screen time. And, you know, we both teach college age students and it's like their reality is in their phone. And we're like, no, learn how to plant a tomato. You know, that's much more important. So just this idea of the land having spiritual capacity and being aware of that. That's what we tried to get across in our book, this like environmental consciousness.
I mean, this whole idea of the genus loci is such a foundation to our profession. And one of the things that kind of frightened me or like set off some alarms was I was asked to do an endorsement for a book on coding the landscape. And this was at a big conference held at Harvard. And it was all about remote sensing,
Artificial
yeah,
intelligence.
artificial intelligence, coding, all of the things that, are opposite of what I think where we really need to be. I'm not a Luddite, but I am a Luddite. But when I wrote them, I said, well, do you know who I am? Do you really want me to
He's
go for?
Mr.
Yeah,
Analog,
do you
not Mr. Digital.
really want me to do this? So I had to wade through 300 pages of really super complex stuff. Of course, I wrote the endorsement, but it really made me aware of like how important this genus loci and the spirit of place is and how far the danger that we're moving away from this basic root in contemporary society. And I think, like coupled with this foundation, I think that's the way to go. But I was just became really afraid that people are removing themselves further and further away from this direct contact with nature.
So in
So,
our research, oh, sorry, did you have a question,
you
Chris? Or
covered so many things right there. I swear I'm not going to let you move on yet.
ha ha
No,
ha
I'm
ha.
totally serious. Like this is because let's go to the genus loci right now. And that's, I want, if you could please elaborate, because you're used to, obviously you speak to students, you have classes, you have people that are in that. And I'm taking an audience and myself included. I sort of might understand. I want you to like I'm a kindergartner, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, going way back in time, you know, the word in our vocabulary comes from the Latin. So, you know, genius loci, literally like spirit of place. And there were in ancient Rome, you would find these inscriptions on stones and altars to the genius because there were gods and goddesses associated with everything, with flowers, with water, with the ocean. You can think of all of like the deities, right, that were representing nature. So that's kind of, you know, kind of where it came from. And then that it like in our field in landscape design, that kind of came back in the 18th century in England because people wanted to design gardens that looked natural. So they so Alexander Pope, you know, the great philosopher and writer, he said, consult the genius of the place and all. And that, like, for when our profession was starting out, 100 years ago, they were like, oh yeah, consult the genius of the place and all.
You sound like a sculptor who sees the sculpture inside the marble, and his job is not to create, but to reveal. It sounds a little, forgive me for interrupting, but is that almost a little bit of the flavor of,
Absolutely.
okay.
Yeah, you're kind of like understanding. You're go looking. You're not drawing the landscape. You're seeing the
Seeing it.
landscape. You're kind of like, what is the landscape saying to you? You're kind of looking at what is really here. And like if we go back th for thousands and thousands of years, these deities and gods and goddesses that represented different aspects of the landscape were worshipped and personified. And I think there's an interesting movement going on now with this idea of personhooding the landscape, giving the landscape a human identity. And I think that's what happened at one time. Like the rivers had a goddess, the mountain had a spirit, the woods were sacred, the tree of knowledge, so each one of these things had a personification that if you looked at them as sort of like having physical features, you'd be less inclined to flatten the mountain, cut down the forest, like pollute the river, dam it up, and these sorts of things.
So in a way, like conservation is kind of tied to those myths and those legends, because if you believe the river is your mother, like you're not going to pollute it. But also, Chris, you're talking about like that idea of seeing and deeply seeing. And you always tell the story about like the tree and looking at the tree. Do you see the tree the same way?
Yeah, I mean, there's this a really good book. One of my favorite books is The Teachings of Don Juan, which is written by Carlos Castaneda. And he, finds this mentor that's a shaman. And there's this discussion that Carlos has with Don Juan about. He goes, "Don Juan, will I ever see the tree or the landscape the way you see the tree?" And he goes, "I doubt it. You see the landscape as it is. You see the tree as it is. When I look at the tree, I slip into a magical time. I slip through another dimension to this portal, and I can see beyond the landscape." And I think this also goes to with scientific thought, like you're talking about this idea. I always want to say the World Wide Web, but
What
it's
wood wide web of plant communication, like
oh,
the
with the
movie.
mycelium and all that
Yeah,
stuff. I
right. So
love it.
like an elder tree will actually send nutrients to a sapling, and a tree in distress will send out signals, to like put your defenses up to all the other trees. And that's science, we're not making that up. And
Oh no. And
and
the
if you
largest
think,
organisms.
right, and then if you think like you're talking about our human ancestors from the ancient age, the boundary between like the physical and the spiritual was very fluid. And we're kind of saying, well, where did they go? Like, are they still, not that we're saying, oh, it's like,
Well, you have to look at it too. Like, if all of these deities of the landscape are worshipped for thousands and thousands of years, where did they go? They're still here. They're
yes.
waiting for us to reawaken them or re-acknowledge them. And we had this really, really interesting experience, because, the foundation for us in landscape history was the genus loci. And several years ago, we went to Assisi and we went to the mountains, up in the mountains of Umbria, and we stayed in a Agriturismo, which was an abandoned abbey, and we were there for four, I think, 4 or 5 nights, and we're both very superstitious, so like every night I'd kind of be woken up with these bright lights happening, like filling the room, and I was afraid to say anything to Liz because I didn't want to scare her. But the last day there, I said, "Oh, I didn't want to scare you, but I've been seeing these bright flashes of light every night." And she looked at me, and her face went white, goes, "I've been seeing the same thing too, and I was afraid to tell you." So on the way out, we're leaving.
like our last day,
Yeah, our
yeah.
last day, we passed by a shrine, and we that we hadn't seen before. We look at it, and the shrine was to all of these visions that had happened there previously. Come to find out, this abbey was an abbey where Saint Francis would stay on his journey up to the mountains where he had the visions, his visions. And We also realized the last day we were there, it was called the Valley of the Genio.
It was in Italian, it was Valangegno. And then if you look at the roots, that means like the valley of the genius. And we're like, what?
So
Mind blown.
the abbey was placed on top of a temple, a Roman temple to the Janus Loci. So what we were experiencing is coming in direct connection with that. And then even weirder, when we're leaving, we go down the road, we're on the mountaintop, we go down the road, we're turn the corner, first corner we go around, there's a Franciscan monk hitchhiking on the side of the road. When we looked at each other, we never pick up hitchhikers. We go, how can we not
It's
give
got to be honest,
this
right?
monk a ride? So he gets in the car, Liz is driving, I don't speak Italian, they're carrying on a conversation. We weave our way all the way down to the bottom of the hill. On the way out, he says, you can let me off here at this gas station. And he says, before I get out, can I give you my blessing? And of course, as a fallen Irish Catholic, I was a little nervous about that, but who's going to turn that down, right?
You can't say
So
no.
he gives us his blessing. He gets out. Liz and I look at each other and say, we should probably give him $20. He's in this, like parking, like in this gas station. So we get $20. We turn around to give it to him. He's vanished. And then we look at each other and go like, where did he go? Did we really give a monk a hitch? Was
Was
this
it
St. Francis?
Saint?
Was this a Did we have a visitation of St. Francis? Kind of like in Pee Wee's Big Adventure, Large March, like there are these stories of like the haunted roads, right? And this is a common occurrence throughout history, these haunted kind of, so like to this day, we're not quite sure what happens, but this experience really kind of reawakened us to like how important this idea of the Janus Loci was. And that kind of started us on the idea of how to create a vocabulary
All right, I'm
in
still
our
not
mind.
letting you move forward yet.
Okay.
So I like to say enchanted because yes, if there's repeated touching of an energetic, it just continues to strengthen. So, so I'm an acupuncturist by training and very much I love Taoism. So I hope you know where I'm going with this. Feng Shui. Again, it's about that balancing of the elements. And in no matter what biome we're looking at in nature, there's a predominance of maybe a particular element, but there's still a balance. Like the desert doesn't have water per se, but what it has, it's very careful with. And the flowers are very careful. Like I'm just telling you for myself, again, layman, just seeing the beauty of how the biomes and how nature communicates and moves along. One other thing, because I don't agree with you about technology as much as I would like to, it's a double-edged sword like everything else. It's been raising awareness, it's been getting people, because our history became dead basically. And it's resurrecting and bringing to life to anyone that has that interest, and not just a little bit, but really touching the heart and connecting deeply. So I feel like, yes, most people are adrift staring at their phones in a concrete jungle. Fine. But there's a few of us who end up looking at a crack in the sidewalk and that one flower that comes out. All right. And that's because I like to focus on the forward because that's what's going to be created. Not saying the things I don't like, I'll talk about those all day. I'm good at that. But bringing myself to see those bright, just the bright spots helps to pull me, helps to raise my heart, helps to raise my vibration. So that's why I do like, I could see what you're saying about technology, totally with you. But even Pokemon, remember that Pokemon Go or whatever it was?
People were out, like we saw wood. Yeah, everybody was out in the landscape
Yes.
wandering around.
Imagine someone makes out with fucking, pardon, with flowers, with plants, with rocks. Imagine making that with this deck,
Oh, there you, now you're
right?
talking.
Get people, like, I'm talking the potential for engagement if we leverage it. Because all it is, it's building momentum, it's changing, because people are dying for it. People are so disconnected from who we are, they're dying for it. Just wanted to put that out there.
No, I think that's great. I think one form of encouragement is that they actually asked me to write an endorsement for this book. on
Yes.
something I'm have no connection with. And I think that the merging, I mean, I've always felt like the merge, like we don't forget the past, but we merge it into the future. So it becomes in wrapped in and not abandoned, I think is it's a foundation that's connected. And I really like, what if we, yeah, like Pokemon looking for the genus loci. I mean, how could that
Right.
be really great? That's $1 million idea
You
there.
take it. You take, I'm giving it to you. Just write my name at the bottom. It's yours because
Looking for something to do next, and that might be it.
Well, no,
but
we
you
could.
have people. People talk to you. Like, seriously, put my name at the bottom because all I want is for it to exist. It's
Yeah.
not about me.
So we do, it's funny you say that we do this thing called the spirit walk. So, we both sketch, we draw. That's how we communicate. We're very visual people.
Yeah.
And we'll take anybody out on a walk, like a nature walk, or even a walk through the urban fabric, walking through the city,
Yeah.
because we look at things a little differently than most normal people. So we call it a spirit walk. And we like, if there's water, we'll listen to the voice of water and we'll ask them to write a haiku. And then we'll, ancient forms of divination was looking at the leaves blowing on the trees. So we'll ask them to look at the leaves and, draw the leaves and draw topography and the hills. So it's kind of, we're kind of there. But yeah, I like the Pokemon spirit of play idea.
No, that's that I
I
like
see a
that.
frog.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then a couple other things, you talked about the biomes and the desert and kind of that idea of conservation of water and just thinking about traditional ecological knowledge and indigenous practices, of course, is, being honored and valued now in our society, which I think is great. But if you think of where you're from, if you're from the desert, you understand how precious water is. If you're from the forest, you understand the sacredness of the grove, right? So I think, again, just using that, I want to say kind of intuitive, that's what we were like researching for the tarot deck and trying to bring that, bring that out again. And I love how you use enchantment because we usually start, when people are like, well, what are you all about? It's like, we're on a mission to re-enchant the landscape. So we're definitely on the same wavelength there. And it's interesting you talk about feng shui. I've always in college there was a book on in ecological design, but they had a geomancy compass. And like so I finally bought one because what I think is interesting about the geomancy compass is you're kind of like finding those hidden currents of energy. And in old days in China, they used the geomancy compass to place their arc their buildings and their landscapes according to these hidden flows, which like acupuncture is kind of you're lining up those form those lines of energy. They use the geomancy compass as a way of finding the right places to put things. I don't understand totally. There's so much, there's thousands of ways of interpreting it, but I think that those finding those hidden currents in the landscape are really, really important, and connecting them up with our own kind of body is also.
Would this be similar? And the answer I know is going to start with no. Would this be similar to using dowsing rods?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
Because
I think.
dowsing rods, I can go right into that easily. I do it, all I do is intuitive and energy work. The field has the truth. All we need to do is connect to it. Since we're relatively weak-minded in the West, disconnected, we like to have tools. So we always know where it all is. We don't need the tools. But it does a nice job to make us certain, and we put our little things in the ground, and now we're plugged in. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, I think the neat thing about dowsing rods, I mean, I think there is some real truth to that. If you look at Kirlian diagrams, where they've been able to photograph the energy of this given off of plants. I mean, there definitely are auras. I think not only are this interconnected web under the ground, but I think that plants, like humans, give off auras. And I think the
Yes.
dowsing rods, someone did that to me. They had two metal dowsing rods, and can you they move like that. So I mean, something's giving off energy, and I think that if we, the adepts, can see and hear this energy. Sometimes you hear a little too much, you go too far off, but Like you can actually kind of like organize things in the landscape according to their kind of auras, I think.
Well, here's so dowsing rods is very similar to muscle testing. It's essentially most of the time it's a yes or no answer. It can be show me an underground river, and it can provide that feedback real time. But I got something for you guys. So I love Kirlian photography, and you can take the leaf, and if anyone wants to, look it up. It's brilliant. You take a leaf, you cut the tip off the leaf, you run it through this high voltage plate, and it still shows the tip of the leaf on there because it's the morphic field. And what I was thinking of is I have a view of life, which is sort of like a role-playing game. There's 100 points. So humans, we have like no armor, but high intelligence, high dexterity. Octopus, no armor, blah blah blah. Rhinoceros, all armor, not a whole lot of smarts, no dexterity. Dexterity is divinity, by the way. It's a creative expression. But you guys will get this. No one does. Termite mounds. I've never seen one in real life. I don't know if you have. They're enormous. They're architectural wonders, marvels, ventilation, the whole nine. These are things that look like ants. There is, without a doubt, an intelligence field. Without a doubt. So, this is exactly, I think this is exactly what we're talking about. But it hit me. I'm like, you know what? Some architect put that together and it's not a friggin' ant.
No.
The ants do the building. And there is an intelligence. Anyone that claims to be a scientist and takes away the possibility of higher intelligence is not a scientist because they're not leaving open that which they have not disproven.
Right.
And that's all I really want to say. But that's the power. Like you think about the intelligence of that mound, the intelligence of the mycelium, the
Yeah.
intelligence of the trees that don't touch leaves at the top. The intelligence of it all, and it's all in love. Like, yeah, I'm totally with you. I love, like, that if you can't walk out and be in a sense of wonder, something's died inside of you, but you can bring it back. Turn off the TV, turn off the overstimulation, and sit there until you hear it, until you see it, until it's part of you, until you feel it. So I told you I was going to go off track a little bit. I thanks for playing.
We're on the same track.
like, yeah, we're only up to the intro. I am so sorry, but I'm having too much fun. So if, back to you guys.
Yeah, no, you made me think also about sort of whales and how they navigate by sonar and even the migratory patterns of birds. And it's beautiful. It's like a network, but not with wires,
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And if you look at one of the things that, I mean, we study garden history, but one of the things that's always baffled me is the Japanese Zen gardens, the raking of those contours. And then, we're teaching sacred landscapes and looking at it and studying magnetism and Kirlian diagrams and stuff. And finally, we came to the conclusion that what they're doing, the monks, when they rake the sand, is they're really participating in those hidden energy currents of the landscape, that kind of like methodical concentration of raking the sand in a pattern is just kind of like retracking the kind of electronic waves that the migratory birds and the mycelium things underground, they're participating in the kind of like the flows of energy in a really interesting way. And the way they rake around the rocks and stuff. So what they're doing is they're kind of showing the Kirlian diagrams of the chi of the landscape in a sense. So,
And actually, the back of our cards kind of have that repeating contour
yeah.
of like an energy field. And we divide the tarot is got the four suits, but we kind of combined Eastern and Western cosmologies. So instead of earth, air, fire, water, we have water, wood, air, and earth. Yeah.
Yeah, this
And
just wants to fight me, but yeah.
kind of see it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll post something, I promise.
Yeah, that's what we were getting at with those, like the four kind of elements in the what we call the minor arcana. But also interesting about the raking of the sand. So we were so lucky to go to Japan for the first time just a year ago last May, and it's always been number one on my bucket list. And I just pinch myself that I got to see all these great Zen gardens and just the beautiful landscape there, like so amazing. But then you think like the monk himself who's doing the reiki is like the mediator between the heavens and, you know, the cosmos and the earth. It's sort of you're channeling all that and really, really neat.
Well, like another interesting thing that we come to find out, have you ever knocked on wood?
For lack
You
of a
know where
better
we're
answer,
going? You know
yes.
where we're going with this?
I really don't, and I'm kind of scared. I'll be
But you
honest.
have knocked on wood, right?
Yes, I have.
And why do you do it?
Because someone
Like,
told me to.
well, because you kind of want to make sure that you're protecting your words, like, right? Like that
Yes.
everything's going to be okay. So
Yes.
you would knock on a tree, like in ancient times, like before you enter the forest, to assure that you would get safe passage. So you would wake up the forest spirits,
Wake
the
up
dryads.
the tree, the dryads in the trees by knocking on wood, you waken them up. And this is one of these interesting things that's so embedded in our DNA, we don't even know it. I mean, we ask people all the time, everybody knocks on wood, no matter we're in Europe or everywhere. And so there are these things that are deeply embedded in us that we don't even know that we're doing. Like you can also go to the cheesiest shopping mall in upstate New York. And there's a fountain in the center, and what's it full of?
Coins.
Coins.
Why?
Like why there? Why that particular place? And this is also a universal thing. You go to Europe, every place there's a body of water like this, it's full of coins. And we believe that this comes from the first forms of divination were the sacred spring. And when you would go to the sacred spring, you'd make an offering to either like have good luck or have your future told. And I think that is why we still do that. People don't even know that they're doing this, but this is an ancient rite that's probably embedded somehow in our DNA that when we see a pool of water, we automatically give it an offering, and it could be, maybe it's an offering to thank the water gods, for providing us the sustenance or the refreshment of water. But once we start to uncover these things, like we begin to find these sort of universal truths.
So I love that. And I got a few things because I always seem to. I think things are heading in an awesome direction. I feel like humans have a tendency right now, societally, to hedge our bets. Most people go to church but don't believe. But they go because they're like, well, if there is a God, well, I should probably be having my butt in this pew. It doesn't mean anything. You're wasting everyone's time, including yours. You're not fooling God. No matter what you want to call God, I call God nature, call God the goddess, I don't care. You're not fooling God. God's not a fool. Now, here's what's really cool. The Schumann resonance has been off the charts, and that's going to be the earth frequency. And I've actually had a meditation recently where it went through me so strongly afterwards, I was literally just like that, physically running through me. So when you're talking about energy centers, I'm strongly in my belief of where we are. The earth is an intelligent, self-healing organism. We are like having fleas on the worst day, with us doing our worst. We're a case of fleas. But what's happening with the level up of energy, and humans are included in this, we are a higher intelligence form. I strongly believe it. And if you look around you, you'll see people are really going through it in the past year because the energy level going up. And it's amazing. And so the way I do acupuncture is intuitive. It's a lot like other things that you've been describing. I put my hand on, let's say you have a hot liver. I'll put my hand over your liver and I'll press and you're going to squirm, you're going to scream, and you're going to call me names. And I'm going to be told where to put my other hand. And I'll put my other hand wherever they tell me. I don't know where, pinky toe on the bottom. Press on the liver, 90%, 100% gone. Pressed over here on a woman today because she had emotional stuff going on. Lightly touched under one of her toes. I felt the muscle twitch, loosen, whole thing relaxed. So I'm not special. I'm actually the slowest person to learn this stuff. I'm persistent as hell. And I know that I can always be better. And I feel like a lot of people now, because we need to ground. There's we are dust motes until we ground, and then we connect and discharge. And you know about this, and tree hugging, no, it's not a ha ha ha, it's real. And grounding, it's real. And we are. See, this is where we'll get into fights. Let's go metaphysics. Have a good time. I spent a lot of time exploring consciousness, and I actually yell at myself for it. But then I realized physicists built CERN to explore what consciousness is. I do it on my own. And I've decided consciousness is what we call left brain and right brain. That's going to be our primary consciousness. We have visual, audio, kinesthetic on top of that. But we also have the body itself. I was torn on whether or not it was a combination of consciousness or if it's its own consciousness. I believe the body is its own consciousness with a connection to Earth. That's why a near-death experience is not the same as out of body. A near death, the tether to the body is snapped for that moment, and so it's complete freedom. Out of body, there's still a tether to the body, so there's still that boundness. That's speculation. But what I do know is the body consciousness, however you want to slice it, is deeply connected to the earth because that's what it is of, and that's what it will return to. Back to you.
Well, I mean that's interesting when you talk about that, like the human consciousness. And one of the things I really think that is a wonderful thing that's happening now is the Gaia spirit, that the earth is alive. So if we look at we're alive, the earth is alive, that might be that connection you're talking about. And when you talk about the tethering of the consciousness, one of the interesting things are some beliefs about dream time. When you first fall asleep, you feel like that, and that means your soul has left your body, but your conscious brain has, wait a minute, no, not yet, and it pulls you back in, which when you that's kind of reminded me of that, because the like you can't leave the dream world till you go into deep sleep.
Yeah, I'm so moved. I forgot what I was going to say, but on these spirit walks that we take with people, the first thing, and I'm not a yoga teacher, but the first thing we do is a grounding exercise, and I remind everybody, what's the core of the earth made out of? It's iron. What is in our blood? What is hemoglobin? It's iron. So thinking about that point of contact, how your feet meet the earth, and thinking about how we're a vertical structure and our bones line up on top of each other, and can you feel that energy from the earth? And rocks, the geologic layer, also has energy. It has chi. So like trying to pull that energy up into our bodies also, I think is important.
And when Liz all does these exercises, I'm always a little nervous that people are going to laugh, or like not participate. They really get into it. They actually close their eyes and meditate, and then they follow along. So I find it really encouraging that everybody kind of feels something and they actually do this. I mean,
And the other thing, just talking about being together within yourself, but then as a whole planet, sharing this earth, and thinking about the spirit of the Mother Earth and Gaia, is almost every culture has that sort of representation of the Earth Mother in Alsacia in West Africa or Pachamama in the Andes. It's like the more that we can get people to realize we're all inhabiting the same planet in this like consciousness together, I think, maybe we always say maybe we'll stop killing each other, because we're also very optimistic, I think. We're very hopeful for a better future.
And I think once we realize that all of these myths, that these ancient myths, are kind of like universal, they probably they're shared by almost every culture, that they've been added on with contemporary religions and stuff, but you go back to the basis and they all believe in the tree of life and the sacred forest and the oracle of the sacred fountain, like all of these things keep adding on to one another, that we find it really interesting. I mean, one of the things I learned that I think's kind of interesting, because I'm really interested in film, and if you look at Vertigo and North by Northwest, Hitchcock, truth is always revealed in the forest in film. And I think this goes back to Shakespeare and probably even earlier on, that the forest is where truth has been revealed. And they also say that all the religious temples were the forest was first, and the temples were built in the forest. So the sacred grove is kind of like a primal, kind of universal kind of symbol that I think is really, really powerful in a way. And let's
Yes,
see what else.
because every biome has its own energetic, and it will, the way I actually, again, Taoism, acupuncture, I believe the repeating patterns. We respect and acknowledge the seasons and the way that works, and it's also held in the body, as above, so below. I'm a huge fan that this whole world is a projection. It's like a dream in the mind of what we would call God. And each of us is having a separate dream that overlaps like a Venn diagram. And I strongly believe that raising my own personal vibration, if you want to change the world, change yourself. I can't change you guys. If I want to change you, I blow your socks off. And you're like, wow, I want whatever this guy has. And then you decide to change. I can't tell you to. I can't pull you or push you. So it's living my best life. And it's pretty wild because we have what, a trillion cells in the body. If I'm in a lousy mood, well, I'm depressed. I used to do that. If I'm depressed, I'm giving them all crappy weather for a very long time. I'm really setting their entire environment. Yeah. Conscious choice to change my mood. Conscious choice to be happy. Conscious choice to find positive over and over and over. We start repeating that. We start changing the world. We start taking action based upon that. We start empowering ourselves to be more. We start, and the most important thing, we start making decisions from abundance and from love. And we stop making them from fear. The fear decisions are never the right one. Those are not authentic. Those are based on disconnect. Disconnect and lack of trust in our Creator, in our Mother Earth, and in ourselves. Following what's not authentic to us, disobeying what our heart says, and following some wayward path because Uncle Bob says if I go into computers, well, then I'll make a great living. So I can't be an artist or some landscape nut job. Can't follow my heart.
No landscape nut jobs.
And so we end up with a society of people disconnected from themselves, coming from a place of fear and scarcity and making decisions that are harmful. But I believe we are at an inflection point. I do, that was not sustainable, and we've hit crisis, and I believe we're at the inflection point right now. It's what I see.
Well, I think something you said is really important. I mean, I really believe in positive projection. Like there's that saying, be careful what you wish for.
Yes.
I really believe that, like what this fits right into what you're saying. If we project positive, when we project, we create our own reality, right? So you project positive, but it goes back to the old hippie vibrations, like, I mean, you've walked into a room and felt bad vibrations, or you felt good vibrations. So I really think this idea of positive projection and thinking positive, every time you open the computer, you think you're going to get that good news, that you're going to win that award, and it'll happen, So I think there really is something to that if we could be on board, and maybe that's what organized religion is you get together and you pray together, on a common positive note. You're projecting. I mean, I'm happy that in Italy there are monks and nuns praying for me,
It's a
Okay.
beautiful thing.
I'll take those vabs, I'll take that.
That's actually, if you don't mind, I did want to find out, how did you both end up doing this? How did you meet? Were you in school together? Like, I'm just a little curious about your backstory because what an awesome profession. What a great way to connect through the heart to what's authentic.
Yeah, well, we met, when we were already pretty mature adults and just became really good friends. And I think we share this common core of like the consciousness. And that's, I don't know what else to say about that. We We love art.
Yeah, I mean,
We love
well, you're
gardens.
great at art. Again, I wish I could show your cards. I'm doing terribly here on that.
No, I mean, I think we both went into, I mean, I went into landscape architecture because I wanted to go into graphic design. I was always interested in ecology, you know, like the whole thing of Earth Day really affected me greatly. I wanted to go to the University of Florida, and I was going to major in graphic design because that's what my dad was in. I looked at the catalog and I came across this thing called landscape architecture, and it seemed to fit everything: ecology, art, design, creativity, a little bit of metaphysics in there. And that just, you know, it just set a light. It was just, I mean, I'm so thank it saved my life. I mean, it's one of the best things. And I kind of never thought I'd be able to teach because my dad always said, "How can you teach? You were so shy, you couldn't ever order a hamburger at McDonald's." I mean, I was the guy in the old rotary phone, could never dial the last number when I was calling a girl, you know, so I never had any, I could never get that last number dialed. So,
Feel your pain.
you know, something, I mean, everybody is surprised I could teach, although everybody said I should be teaching. So somehow I never planned on this as a profession, and it just kind of, you know, like, I guess it lined up. And the ability to kind of like learn from my students and teach, and then, you know, we met and we started teaching, doing a summer program in Italy, and that kind of like kind of merging of those things and this experiences, we started to have these metaphysical experiences. You know, this is the one with in Assisi is just one example of many kind of things that we had. As a matter of fact, at the Temple of Hercules in Rome, tell that story. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, we were staying at the American Academy in Rome, and we were so privileged to go with the archaeologist up the scaffolding to the top of the temple to look at the capitals. And you know, she's like, "Attente la testa," and I'm like, "Oh, I know that that means watch your head." And I hit my head on the scaffolding, so I had to go down. And I'm sitting on a rock, and everybody else is up on the, you know, the top of the temple. And I look down, and it's a tarot deck there. And I'm like, wow, this is kind of cool, you know. And I didn't really know too much about tarot at the time, other than appreciating it for its artwork and for the illustrations. So everybody, and it was the Temple of Vesta, wasn't
Yeah,
it? Or
well, it was the Temple of Hercules. They thought it was the Temple of Hercules. And what they found out when we were there, that.
it was the temple, it was called the Temple of Fortune. I'm like, I found a tarot deck at the Temple of Fortune, and that's, you know, something's going on there. But I think what, you know, we share this lens of kind of looking at the landscape as art and nature and metaphysics, and I think that's a really strong bond. And we're just really excited right now that that's resonating with people and that our work is getting some attention, because you know, ultimately, we want to turn people on to that environmental consciousness. And the tarot deck, the tarot is a storytelling device, and it's based on metaphors. So we're trying to use those metaphors to put a little science in there. You know, our Wheel of Fortune is the hydrologic cycle. And if you think about water on the planet Earth, there's going to be periods of drought and periods of flood, but also in your life, right? That's a metaphor that you're going to have abundance and you're going to have scarcity. And like you were saying, Chris, we need to learn how to balance that, and just recognizing that it's always going to be in balance. So
Yeah, we see it as kind of a vocabulary of landscape metaphysics, or like a way of just getting back in touch, or raising your consciousness of, by dealing the cards. It opens up, it makes you think. I mean, what's neat about the cards is they really are alive. When you put them down, they change every time. You know, like they dialogue with one another. And it's interesting when we do group readings, you know, the energy that people put into they're really sort of magical things, I believe.
pathways to enchantment.
So what I love, and I'm just going to take this out of what you said, is one of the things I emphasize, and I had said this, is following our heart. And literally your story is following your heart. And as you follow your heart, the path is laid. And as the path is laid, the synchronicities happen, the beauty starts to come out, and life becomes richer. Life becomes just more vibrant. And it's like, God's smiling at you and you're smiling back. It's a very healthy, beautiful, beautiful place to be. And you're doing what you're here for. And so many people, we spend our whole lives trying to find that. And you're literally doing what you're here for. And it's beautiful to see the both of you. It's your passion, it's your love, it's your mission, it's everything. And I love that. And your art is beautiful. The card's absolutely gorgeous. And
Thank you.
tarot itself, just for anyone, tarot, whatever, however people say it, is it's not just about a card. It's about the relationship between the cards. And a lot like the way I practice acupuncture, I use my own references. It's the feeling, the knowing that we get, you have developed a relationship, and the knowing that you get when the cards come up by the relationships that you see, feel, and there's everything on top of the water, but when you hit the stillness, you can see what's underneath.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, I know, I sort of do my little tangents every now and again. You guys are doing awesome. I just every so often have to just, because I'm blown away. I'm having fun.
Yeah, so are we. This is a great conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you. So it's just, I have so much hope. Like every year we hear about something that's going to start eating plastic. Every year it's like, yeah, there's the bad that keeps happening, but the good is getting better. That's just what I see. That's what I choose to believe. In the end, I'm going to end up in the ground, but I'm going to enjoy the ride. That's what we're here for, is to, to each of us has, and please, each of us has a unique set of gifts. It's like there's a lock and a key, and we each have a unique one, like a fingerprint. And that's what we have to give to this world. And really, we can all shine if we let ourselves, be vulnerable, be authentic, be open, and connect to each other at the level of human. If we're different, that's awesome. We just learned something. If we're the same, that's awesome. We just supported someone. But it's all just do the connection. Don't fight life. So anyhow, back to you guys. I don't know.
Well, I mean that's one of the great things about teaching that I mean I just wanted to take it as a job, but I mean one of the things we do is exactly that. We try to find every student's kind of like key to their unlock the thing that they want to do the best. And I think that's what we try to do. You know, it takes a while to kind of see what that is, and it can be really, you know, it's generally very satisfying.
Yeah.
Like leading people to, like we always say, like when we have a student, like it's what do you want to do? Like do the cool in my class. I want you to do the coolest thing ever. Why did you come to graduate school? Go back and think about why are you here? What made you come and pick the professional landscape architecture? I'm giving you the opportunity to explore that.
Yeah.
And many times I just get blank stares. Oh my God, you're giving me freedom to do what my passion is. So part of that's the thing I enjoy the most about teaching is trying to find connecting people up to their passion, but also letting them know that it's okay to do that. Like you don't have to be a lawyer, or work for the stock market. It's okay what you want to do, it's okay to do that. I mean, and then again, like if you want to go off and be a drummer, if that's what you want to do that. I mean, we've had
Don't be a bass player.
just don't be a, don't run off with the bass player. Ah,
I'm taking it that maybe one of us plays bass.
yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was a line from a movie or
Oh,
something, but my brother-in-law is a very good bass player.
good. And it's okay to fail. Boys and girls, it is not just okay to fail. Fail.
Well, that's what
Learn.
they say in Pixar is if you're not failing, you're not succeeding.
Yeah, and
No,
I
that's
feel
what
like the
is kind of
world we're in
success.
now, it's bubble wrap, but I know failure. I'm not saying it's a kind teacher, but it's an
No.
effective one. And not knowing how to lose, not knowing how to fail and pick myself up, my
Yeah.
goodness, I can't imagine. So yeah, don't be, especially when you're younger, take that chance. I promise, if you fail, You'll learn more than had you succeeded, and the next time you'll be even stronger.
And the key to that is you're going to be knocked down. Yes, we always hear that you're going to be knocked down and get back up again, but you're going to be knocked down over and over again. And I think the people that really succeed, they just keep getting back up and going because they passionately believe in where they want to be. But you're going to get knocked down over, even if you're successful, you're going to get knocked
They
down.
end up looking like Rocky.
Yeah, that's right. I could have been a contender.
Yeah, just punch drunk and everything, but he did it didn't stop him.
No.
And actually, if you know the story behind that movie, that's a story. It's an incredible story what Sylvester Stallone did to make that movie. And people offered him real money. He had to sell his dog. People offered him real
Wow.
money. And he's like, "No, I want to star in this film. No one else can do Rocky." And he put everything on the line. He bought his dog back for quite a bit more afterwards. But
Good.
that's the story of it. And it really is that
Yeah.
story of, heart. In the
He
end,
believed in
yeah, it was what mattered. So, it's beautiful. So, thank you guys so much for taking the time.
Thank you,
Oh, this
Chris.
has been wonderful. It's been a really great dialogue. I wish we could go on for days and days and days, but anyway, this has been really, the great thing is it also has sparked lots of new ideas, and it's also nice to find someone on the same the same path or the same understanding of where, where we're grounded.
Well, you guys are awesome because, and Elizabeth, I'll let you in one sec. It's like we're on a Venn diagram and we have an overlap. Most of us is a little bit, but we have this beautiful overlap. And that's what I love is being able to have these different angles and just really exploring like awesome humanity.
No, really appreciate this, and just, with a very full heart. And that's something I've really grown into and learned a lot, is just always come from an attitude of love, like start with love,
Yeah,
So
it's
thank
beautiful.
you.
Well, thank you again. And you guys have a wonderful, wonderful day.
No,
You
thank
too.
you.
Thank you. Oh, wait, anyone wants to contact you, give me information.
Oh, okay. Our website is thewisdomofplace.com, and our Instagram is just Wisdom of Place. I think you can reach us through those two sites.
And I'll also put links in the podcast itself, but I just wanted to give you a chance to say it. Thank you
Well,
again.
thank you.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
All right.
Bye.